Yesterday or Monday, we talked about how to handle conservation equations, how they can develop shocks, and how we can use high resolution shock capturing techniques as a way to numerically evolve them in the presence of shocks. So just to remind you, sort of the main ingredients of a grid-based code for solving a conservation equation. First of all, you need to write your hyperbolic PDs in a conservative form. Then you need a way of reconstructing your function from a set of points and interpolating it to, for example, the cell interfaces or faces. And to need that, do that, you need some sort of slope or flux limiter, which will give you higher order interpolation for smooth flows, but in discontinuity, in the presence of discontinuities, won't introduce extra oscillations, which could make your evolution unstable. And then you want some sort of at least approximate Riemann solver that will correctly handle the physics in the presence of discontinuities and get, you know, we'll use information about the characteristics of the equations at the interface. And so we talked about one example of that, which was the Rho solver. And then at the end, we talked about how, at least for the case of general relativistic hydrodynamics, one has to introduce these in order to put the equations in conservative form, you need to introduce these new conserved variables, which are in general a nonlinear function of the primitive variables like density, specific energy, and velocity. And so to go back from the conserved variables to the primitive ones, you need some sort of root finding algorithm. So just briefly, I want to mention that though in principle these are sort of all the ingredients you need to go out and write, for example, a GR hydro code, these are not actually the issues that people spend a lot of time sort of tuning and debugging to actually get one of these codes working. So just mention a couple of things about the sort of CV underside of hydrodynamics. And so sort of three things are so-called numerical atmosphere. Inversion failures, and density flooring or speed limiting. So the hydrodynamics equations actually break down or become singular when the density goes to zero. So that means you actually need to impose that your fluid is non-zero everywhere. And so, for example, if you're trying to, you know, model what happens when two neutron stars merge, you know, ideally you would just have one neutron star here, one neutron star here, and the density would go to zero at the surface of the neutron stars, and outside you wouldn't have to worry about that. But in practice, you can't actually do that. I mean, you're dividing up your domain into grids and moving these along. And so in practice, what you actually have to do is add a sort of very low density fluid everywhere, including outside the neutron star. That might be a million or a billion times less dense than the maximum density of a star. And then you try to argue that or establish that this low density numerical atmosphere isn't actually affecting your solution.
Why do you have to do that?
Because otherwise, because if you let the density go to zero, then the hydrodynamics equations become singular.
Yeah.
And as they approach zero, they become singular. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so another problem you can potentially have is you can evolve your conserved variables, and then you try to invert them back to get your primitive variables, and that can fail because you can potentially, due to truncation error, especially in this atmosphere where things are not necessarily under control, you can actually evolve to a set of conserved variables that don't correspond to any physical primitive variables. So, you know, a robust algorithm needs a way to sort of handle this problem, which is hopefully just happening in the low density atmosphere. We don't really worry about it, but if you sort of handle it in an unstable way, it can spread everywhere. That's another potential problem. So typically when these inversion failures happen, one of the most common reasons is basically the energy, the evolution of the energy is bad, so that it becomes negative. So a common fix is to basically assume that the specific energy takes on a cold value, which is only dependent on the rest mass density. So this is sort of the, you know, zero temperature value. And then you throw away the value the specific energy actually evolved to. And then finally, you know, even if you put this atmosphere everywhere, it's possible to evolve due to truncation error to states where the density becomes zero or negative. So again, because that'll make all your equations blow up, you need to sort of check at every evolution that none of the cells have gone below some density threshold that you usually introduce. You need to floor all the density values. And there's also usually a problem with going to very high velocity. So people oftentimes also impose sort of a maximum Lorentz factor that you allow the fluid to reach. Because, you know, in the limit of the Lorentz factors, or the velocity is approaching the speed of light, the energy is going to infinity. Yeah, so we're not actually going to have to worry about that for the particular example we're going to spend most of today doing. But I just wanted to sort of keep that in mind. Yeah, so for the rest of class, we're going to do sort of a hands-on example where we solve the Burger's equation using the methods that I outlined on Monday. So first, let me just write all the sort of formulas on the board, and then we'll work to solve it. And you can download a copy of the code that will be altering either from the GitHub website, or you can copy it from my directory on Symmetry. So I'll show you where that is in just a second.
Is it in what language is it in?
It's in Python. All right, so the equations we're solving, Burger's equation, remind you what it looks like. It's just the scalar equation, and this is our flux. So for this purposes, we'll just let our domain be x goes from 0 to 1. And the boundary conditions we use are just periodic ones. So we'll identify x with x goes to x plus 1. And then the numerical methods. So for the reconstruction, we'll use the min-mod limiter that I discussed on Monday. So to remind you what that is, so say we want to calculate our fluid variable u within some cell. So we take the value at its center, and then we use a linear interpolation according to some slope, sigma. So to calculate sigma, we do the following. We take the min mod of two different estimates of the slope. using either the cell to the right or the cell to the left, sort of right hand or left hand stencil. And to remind you what this minmod function does, so it gives you just the first value when the magnitude of the first slope is less than the magnitude of the second, but both the slopes have the same sign. Can you guys see that part of the board? Or yeah. And when if B has the smaller magnitude, then we take that one. And in the case that the slopes have different sign, then we just take the slope to be zero. And so the final ingredient we need is our approximate Riemann solver.
Can you push the board that's behind up so we can see what you just wrote?
Yeah, I'll just write here and then I'll move this up so okay. We can look at everything. Yeah, so for the flux, we're going to use Rho's method. And to remind you, the formula for that, take the flux. So we are doing an approximate Riemann solver. So we assume that we have the left value for, so we have some interface that we want to calculate the flux through. And we're assuming that to the left of this interface, our foo variable takes the value ul, and to the right, it takes the value ur. So we take the averages of the fluxes, and then we subtract out by the absolute value of, in the general case, this would be the Jacobian of the flux. But since they're one-dimensional, it's just the one eigenvalue of our flux, of our equation. So lambda would be this. And since we have this particular simple form, this is just u. And we want to evaluate this at an average of the left and right. And then delta here, where delta is the jump that we get across from right to left. And for this particular case, we can just take a simple form for the average. Just take the arithmetic mean. Okay, so any questions about those before we go and try to implement those? Okay, so now if we can turn back on the screen. So first of all, let me just show you a solution. So we'll spend most of the time looking at this initial condition where we just have a simple sine wave, again on our domain from 0 to 1. So first of all, we can just run this and demonstrate the fact that you can start from smooth initial conditions. This is a sine wave, it's C infinity, and evolve to something that has discontinuities. So again, if you remember from Monday, the characteristics are just given by u. So this means that at the maximum of the sine wave, that part is going to move faster compared to the minimum of the sine wave. So it'll overtake it. And you'll get these developmental shocks, kind of like waves crashing on the ocean. So it develops into these discontinuity, these shocks that propagate. Yeah, so the goal will be to sort of implement a code that will give you this answer. Yeah, so if you want to download the code to work along, so it's on the GitHub website, as you can see here, this Berkers that, so it's an IPython notebook. So who here hasn't used Python before? Just you, okay. Yeah, so I'm not gonna use the notebook, but this is basically the same code implemented in notebook form. So you can either download it from there, or if you wanna log on to Symmetry, you can copy it. So this is my directory on Symmetry. So if you go to my home directory, /we/hydro_example, there's a IPython notebook version or just a regular .py script. Yeah, so if you have any trouble setting up your Python notebook, ask Dustin before he leaves. Okay, so let's take a look at the code I have there so far. So let's just go through this step by step. So I have this Berkers object for implementing the Berkers equation, and this initialization routine takes a couple of arguments: the number of cells that we're going to discretize our domain from 0 to 1 in, this IC is the initial condition, and this out CAD just stands for the cadence of output. So it's some options for IO. Then we just assume that we start at t equals 0. So in order to implement these periodic boundary conditions, there are a couple ways to do it. But the way I've chosen here is to use so-called ghost cells. So I just tack on a couple cells at the beginning and the end of the domain. And then whenever I take a time step, I just copy the ghost cells from the other side of the domain. So that makes implementing it a little easier. But there's other ways to implement periodic boundary conditions. So then here's our X domain. It goes from 0 to 1, but then with the ghost cells attached on. And remember, these are cell-centered values. So we divide up our domain from 0 to 1 in cells. And then we imagine that we have points at the center of every one of those cells. And then there's a function it calls to set the initial values of our conserved variable u. So you can see there's two options so far. One is the sine wave, just given here, a constant plus a sine wave. And then another one's a step function. And then we just set how big our time step is. So again, you'll recall that sort of the characteristic speed a propagation is just set by the value of u. So here we're just considering initial conditions where u is sort of order one. So we can set our time step to be something that's of order dx for stability. OK, so that's just the initial setup. So then we have a function that returns the physical flux. And as I wrote down over there, it's just 1/2 u squared. And then I have a function that's going to calculate the flux at an interface given the left and right values. So right now, I'm basically ignoring all the stuff we learned in the class on Monday. And I'm not using any shock capturing techniques. So I'll just set the flux to be the average of the flux from the left and the right state. And then we also need some method that, given the values at the cell centers, will reconstruct the left and right values at the cell interfaces. And so again, ignoring everything we learned in class on Monday, I'm just using linear interpolation between the two cell centers to get the left and right value and just setting them to be the same. Okay, and then I calculate the time derivative of u in this function here. So we use the left and right states, plug those into this flux function, with the flux, and then calculate u dot is basically this approximation of the derivative of the flux with respect to x. So right now we do have a conservative method, right? Basically, because the flux going into one cell is the same flux as the cell leaving, as the flux leaving the neighboring cell. So we'll check that in a second. And then finally, there's a function for applying the boundary conditions right here. And so here you can see that I just basically set these values in the ghost zone by copying over. So the values on the far left in the ghost zone, you just get by copying over from the far right using these periodic boundary conditions. And the time stepping, I'm using Runge-Kutta second order method. So hopefully you've seen that before. We get a second order accurate approximation of the time evolution by first taking a half step. So that's this u half value. And then we plug in the value of the conserved variable at the half time step and calculate the flux there to get a second order accurate estimate of the evolution of u for one whole time step. So take the half step, apply the boundary condition, take the full step, apply the boundary condition, and now we're at t equals d plus dt. And yeah, this evolution routine, which basically just takes time steps until you reach a time that's a specified final time. And then there's also some options to output every few time steps. So any questions about that so far? So far, we're not using any high-resolution shot capturing techniques. Yeah, and then I just have some output options here. So this just plots this output function, just outputs a P and G of the U as a function of X at some given time. And this plot reconstruction routine basically plots what we're using to reconstruct the value at the left and right sides of the cell interface. So we can use that to check that we're doing things correctly. And then these final functions just return the solution, taking off the ghost zones, and return the x domain, taking off the ghost zones. And then finally, so we have one conserved quantity, which is going to be the, in this case, just the one-dimensional integral of u as a function of x, right? So I'm going to call this conserved quantity just the mass. And to calculate it, yeah, we just sum up the values of u and multiply by dx. So just this is just the approximation of the integral of u, which should be conserved by our conservation equations. OK, so let's run this and see what happens. Actually, first, before we run it, so I'll show you this plot of the reconstruction. You notice I'm just calling this dot, this plot reconstruction function. So the red circles here are the cell centers we're using. And then the lines show you the approximation of the conserved variable within a cell. So here, we're just using linear interpolation so far. So that's what that looks like. So next, let's run it and check that we're conserving mass. So let's get the mass before we evolve it. And then evolve it sometime. And then get the final mass. And compute the fractional change. Just by doing the final over the initial divided by the initial. The parentheses. Okay, so the change in mass, at least according to this measure, is exactly zero, you know, even though we have truncation error in our solution. And that's again because we're using one of these conservative methods. So that's a nice property to have. But now let's take a look at what our solution is actually doing. It's failing spectacularly. You can see that as soon as we start to develop these discontinuities, things just go totally wild. So again, this is why we're spending a whole week on conservation equations as a separate topic. So now we need to fix this. Okay, so what should we do first? Start with maybe this linear interpolation is a problem because, you know, as soon as we develop these discontinuities, you know, the assumption that things are linear is going to break down. So let's just make things simpler by basically assuming that each that within each cell our function is constant. So I just now this u plus and minus just returns u for both values. So if we plot the reconstruction.
Sorry, can you go back? I got lost.
Yeah, sorry. All I did was, so I had up and um there, and I just got rid of the p and the m. So now basically we can ignore all of this, and we're just returning u.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is like a first or a sort of zeroth order. So we're just assuming that each value is constant within the cell.
Why are we doing that?
Huh?
Why are we changing that?
Yeah, so, I mean, as I was discussing in class on Monday, basically, in order to make things stable, well, we sort of need two ingredients. And one of them is we want our interpolation scheme to not introduce extra oscillations when we have shocks or discontinuities in our solution. If you just assume it's constant with the cell, that's a simple way to do that, right? Yeah. So let's just plot that first. Yep, and so as expected, we're just assuming that within each cell, everything is constant. And so by the way, I have this little run script, which is automatically implemented in the IPython notebook, but all it does is runs the code and then makes a movie of all the output. So let's get rid of that plot and actually evolve it. All right, so how does it look? Still doesn't look great. So the problem is we're still not handling the Riemann problem correctly, right? So we're just assuming that things are nice and smooth and that we can calculate the flux just by taking the average of the left and right states. So it's not incorporating any characteristic information. So the next step is, let's swap this out and use Rho's method that I wrote over there. So we want to use the average value, which will take it by averaging the left and right states. And then we want to calculate the jump, which is just given by the difference of the left and right states. And so our what I call lambda here, which is the characteristic speed, is just given by you average this simple equation, and then we want to multiply by the jump. So that's the implementation of Rho's method. Any questions about that? So let's try that. Okay, that looks a lot better, right? So now things are not going unstable. We see that it was developing shocks, but they don't lead to these extra oscillations. Okay, so now things are not going crazy, but we don't expect this code to be better than sort of first order accurate, even when we have smooth flows, because we're using this approximation that the fluid variables are constant within each shell. So let's see if we can do a little better by, instead of assuming constant, implementing this min-mod linear interpolation. All right, so this gets a little bit complicated because at the very ends of my domain, I can't calculate this quantity, right? Because I don't have another cell on the other side to estimate it. Estimate the slope with the sort of left-hand stencil, and same thing on the right hand. But since I'm using these ghost cells, it's fine if I don't actually evolve correctly within the ghost cells. So what we want to do is calculate a slope. So initially, set that to be just zero everywhere, but an array that has the same size as U. So that's just, this is just the NumPy function for returning zeros everywhere. And let's calculate the what I'll call delta U, which is just given by taking U and the cell-centered value of U and subtracting the previous value. So is everyone familiar with these, like this index notation for Python arrays? So this just says take the array starting, so skip the first entry and start at just the second entry. But since we're using zero indexing, the second entry is labeled with the index one. And this minus one means skip the last entry. So I just have two arrays, one has all the values except the first entry, and one has all the values except the last entry. And then I subtract them. So it's just U of j minus U of j minus one for each entry. OK, so for the slope, I'm not going to set the first and last value because I don't have enough points there. But all the other values, So I can, by default, just set them to this delta u. But now we need to check if we're in the regime where this delta u, or this u of j minus u of j minus 1 is bigger or smaller magnitude than the preceding estimate of the slope. So the way to do that is like this. So this just turns another array that that's either true or false based on whether this quantity is bigger than that quantity. So wherever that's true, we want our first guess here of what the slope was. It doesn't satisfy the min mod function, so we should overwrite that. And then use the preceding value. And we need a index I there. All right, and then we also need to check if these two estimates have the same sign or not. And wherever they don't have the same sign, we should just set our estimate of the slope to 0. And then for u plus, we just want to extrapolate to the right-hand side of the cell interface, just 1/2 times the slope. And the other one, just minus 1/2 times the slope. So any questions about that? We can check if we actually did that correctly by plotting what the reconstruction looks like now. All right, so it does look like a decent estimate of the linear interpolation, but we can also notice, particularly if we go around a maximum, that you know, because the slope is changing from increasing to decreasing, the min mod has to reduce to just assuming it's constant there. And we can also notice that, you know, because the slope is decreasing this way, that it's going to use the slope from this point here as opposed to the slope. Let's look at this point. So it has two estimates of the slope, right? One you get by connecting this point to that point, and it's not using that one. It's using the one you get by connecting this point to that point because that slope is smaller because the derivative is decreasing as you approach the maximum. So it looks like we did implement this min mod interpolation correctly. But you know, as you'll notice, it tends to flatten out these maxima and minima. So any questions about that? So we can run that now. And everything is still stable, even with this like linear type interpolation. So So for the homework, or you can go ahead and start for the rest of class, you should show that we do actually get second order accurate solution, at least before shocks develop, using this min-mod interpolation, except you know, in the vicinity of these minima or maxima. So I have a question. Have you guys talked about how to calculate like the convergence order of a solution by comparing the values at different resolutions? I'm seeing some confused faces, so no?
I went through it at the blackboard, but apparently a repetition might be.
Okay, yeah. So just review quickly. So when we calculate some numerical solution with some, let's say, finite number of, or let's say with some finite grid spacing, what we actually get is the true solution plus some error term. And this error term should scale with some power of the grid spacing. So when you say, a solution is second order, to usually mean that the error here scales with a power of this n equals 2, so the error scales quadratically with the grid spacing. So the way you would actually check this is, you know, for example, you can you know, calculate your solution at some grid spacing, then you can calculate it again with twice as many points, and then you can calculate again with four times as many points. And you know, using this, you should get your true solution plus some error term so let's just normalize this E to this delta X. And so then here, we should get 1/2 squared. And then here, we should get 1/4 squared. So we can look at the difference between this solution and that solution, or the difference between this solution and that solution. And we should just get this E up to some numerical factor that you can calculate, like based on the how much you increase the resolution. So you can just make a plot of this minus this, and then another plot of this minus that times some factor, which you can work out from this math. And then depending on, and then these two curves, if you got this factor correct, should align with each other. They should agree. And notice this numerical factor alpha will be different whether or not you have second order convergence or first order convergence or fourth order convergence. So this is a way to, so basically how much this overall scaling factor here tells you what order your solution is converging at. So for the homework, you'll do this for the solution here. Yeah, so for the rest of class, you're welcome to get started on that or just experiment some more with the code. You can try different initial conditions like a step function or things like that. You can see what happens if you have like a low density region. And I'll walk around and answer any questions.